Good morning, folks. Welcome back and happy Friday. Yes, it is a Friday morning, and it's therefore time for Drive Time Friday. And I'm thankful to tell everybody we got the whole crew back with us this morning. Jeff is online with us from quite a bit further south in Costa Rica. Got Tim Kern on as well from the heart of the northern Midwest. And in any case, there is a whole lot to talk about on so many fronts. So let me go to the most recent guy that we haven't heard from for a while and say, hey, good morning, Tim, and kind of start us off. Where do you think, of all the things that are out there in the news, we ought to begin to talk about?
Well, let's start on a good note with a successful flight to the fringes of space yesterday.
All right. Well, that's
the baby, the last frontier.
Yeah, it pretty much is, except for the bottom of the ocean.
I think it's
just absolutely wonderful that private enterprise is going where no government has gone in the last long time, except probably China.
Well, exactly. And, for those that didn't see the story, and I'm pulling up the article here. I had it yesterday. Virgin Galactic, which is Sir Richard Branson's venture into outer space, and actually both Tim and I have met at least some of the principals that were involved in this thing way back. I got to meet Bert Rutan a number of times, who's the designer of all of this, at Oshkosh, of course, where the world's pilots and home builders all gathered together. Bert's kind of a fixture at that and had been for a long time. I remember when he was first talking about the X Prize, and I attended one of his speeches on it, which he eventually won, and the idea was to encourage private enterprise to put a man, again, not with government expenditures, into space. And Bert had a plan for doing it, and he actually did it several years later with what was called White Knight 1, or White Knight in those days, mm-hmm. and a Spaceship 1. And the idea was kind of like what they used to do with the X-15. A carrier vehicle would take a rocket up to about 50,000 feet or so, up into the 400, 500 flight levels, and then release it. The rocket would fire. And then it would take a pilot or two up ballistically, almost, by the time they were done, over the frontier of space, 50 or 60 miles. And then he had a really clever way that it would come back in. He called it the shuttlecock recovery, where the tail would tilt up and the plane would reenter. And the idea was they could do this literally on the cheap. And he wanted to make sure he could go. Certainly Richard Branson did, too. He came on board a few years later and financed the next phase after Bert and his company, Scaled Composites, won the X Prize and got a lot of infusion. It was private cash to help do this. And then as of yesterday, they flew Spaceship 2 from White Knight 2 with all the Virgin Galactic painting on it. And it took off successfully, went up again above 50 miles. And re-entered. So all looks good. And yeah, you're right. It's quite a nice thing to see. Go ahead, Tim.
It's a lot of fun when you start talking about miles instead of thousands of feet. And
yeah.
You're looking at 264,000 feet, which is, what's that, flight level 26400?
Yeah.
that's pretty good. That first private astronaut, Mike Melville, actually was in the EAA chapter here in Anderson, Indiana.
He
came from this area. I never met him, but because he was long gone by the time I moved here.
Okay, well, I met him at Oshkosh, I'm sure, one time, but that was about it. Not nearly as often as I ran into Bert up there, or as you mentioned, mm-hmm. Their brother Dick. And some folks may remember this is the same set of people, Bert Rutan in particular, that had a number of aviation firsts. Most of the EAA types, the experimental aircraft folks that go to Oshkosh, knew him as one of the most prominent designers of home-built aircraft ever. He designed the Long Easy and the Very Easy, most specifically, that everybody knows, and lots were built. And then he went on to design the Voyager, that was the first unrefueled round-the-world trip, and his brother Dick and a woman named Jeannie Yeager flew that. And that was, back in the 90s, a long time ago.
That was 1986.
80. Oh, see, there you go. You get older and you miss all this stuff. But I do remember
the airplane is in the Smithsonian with the winglet still broken off.
Yep.
Because they broke it off on takeoff.
On takeoff.
It was a bad time to do it.
And as a matter of fact,
it was more like worn off by the asphalt.
Yeah.
Right.
But the first time I met Bert was at Oshkosh. I love telling the story. I won't in this case, but essentially, my first trip to Oshkosh was the year that the Voyager was coming to Oshkosh on its way to the Smithsonian. So it was sitting there, and I literally had just landed. I was excited as all get out to be at Oshkosh, and I walked over and I saw a Defiant, which is one of Bert's designs. I'd never seen a Defiant in person before, and I went up to look at it, and there's a guy trying to push it back into line, and I said, "Hey, you need a hand." And I looked at his name tag, and all it said was Bert. And I thought, oh, imagine that. I've only been at Oshkosh for less than an hour, already met Bert Rutan. So that's the kind of a place it is. And anyway, this is exciting to us pilots, folks, simply because it is really nice to see people who have incredible intelligence and the get out the and do it mentality to actually get out and do it. And to see them be successful is a real great blessing.
Well, you know, meeting Bert Rutan at Oshkosh is a little like bumping into the Pope at the World Bingo Finals. You know,
yeah, you got to do it.
It's a very neat thing. Yeah,
yeah,
you just absolutely have to. And if you ever, we're way off track, but if you ever want to see the most incredible array of aircraft in the world, go to Oshkosh in July. It's worth it. I know it's the same time as Cheyenne's Frontier Days. But see if you can break away from the rodeo one year and get out to Oshkosh.
It is exciting. Now, you've been there since I have, but I tried to get up there when I was more actively employed. I get there every couple of years, but it's been several since I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss it. And it is. It's, folks, if you've never had a chance to go, it is the world's aviation mecca, and there's an atmosphere there of people that love to fly. And you'll run into all kinds of folks that that we read about and understand. Pappy Boyington before he passed, I met him. General Chuck Yeager a whole bunch of times. Yeah.
Saw Jimmy Doolittle there.
You're naming all these people, and half of the listeners won't know who they are. Pappy Boyington, you guys might remember him from Black Sheep.
Bye bye Black Sheep. Yep. They know others too. I mean, I remember being there the year that all of the surviving Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo astronauts were there. And lot of names people may have heard, all of them up on the stage, along with Bob Hoover, who I had a chance to meet a number of times, probably the world's greatest pilot for many, many years, universally acknowledged by the astronauts.
Scott Crossfield, of course, General Yeager's there all the time. All you have to do is listen. You can find him.
Yeah.
You know, it's an incredible place, and Harrison Ford didn't go this past year, but he's there almost every other year, although I have yet to see the Millennium Falcon show up.
Okay, no, I haven't seen that, but yeah, you're right.
I just want to see the Wookiee.
Yep.
As far as I know, he's not a pilot.
Okay.
Let's talk about some of the other things, because unfortunately there's a lot of not as good news this week as well. Let me throw this one out, because I know Tim knows more about it than I do, and I'm kind of curious. There were a huge rash of bomb threats all across the country. They certainly had one thing in common, and that is that they look coordinated and not accidental, but not much else. You know, schools, businesses, public places, you name it, all over the map got bomb threats. And it just doesn't quite smell right, and it doesn't seem like there was anything real behind it other than some kind of coordination.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the spam emails that you get all the time wanting to build you a website, except this time it's, oh, by the way, there's a bomb under your mother's bed. And the funny thing about it is that it looks very, very amateurish, in that only an amateur would send so many all at once, because that's going to be a little easier to track. And when they figure out who did this, it's going to be some high school kid. I'll just put some money on that right now, who thinks he's being smart. And, I'll even go so far as to say it's a male high school kid. How's that?
Okay. Not an Islamic male high school kid?
They're going to come down hard on him and then give him a job at the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't make, you know, and it's to paraphrase Yoda, do or do not. There is no threat. What good is a threat?
Well, I'll suggest one other possibility.
Remove the element of surprise.
The threat is good if, in fact, there is something more behind it, and somebody is using the threat as a feint, as a way to essentially distract, while something else that's more real, it doesn't get announced in advance, is the larger plan. Who knows is the point.
Well, the fact is, nothing happened, and it's like so many other threats that get a lot of play. If they'd been really wanting to scare people, they would have said sometime in the next 30 days, and then they'd have people scrambling around for a month.
That's true. Well, anyway,
it's nothing. You know, it's not a thing, as they say.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the things that are things. How about the continuing saga of regardless of whether we have any evidence or not, and even though Russia didn't pan out, we still have the Mueller crew, the compromised Comey lot, all of those people that are bound and determined to say, we're going to impeach this guy, we'll make up something if we have to. Various folks were sentenced this week for not caving in as fast as they were supposed to, and yesterday there was a trio, or at least there was supposed to have been a trio, of people from the Clinton Foundation that were to testify, and that seemed to have been kind of for the most part, a flash-in-the-pan no-show event as well.
Go for it.
Go ahead. You got anything on that that you know, Jeff?
No, I don't have anything on that.
Okay, well, let me give a teeny bit more background, then we'll move on. I know where all the bodies were buried was the way it started early in the week. The CFO of the Clinton Foundation was caught. This guy's Andrew Kessel is his name, telling investigators that he knew about all kinds of illegality, criminality, IRS issues, and so forth. Essentially, as most folks are pretty well aware, even though it's a whole different thing to prove it, the Clinton Foundation raised billions of dollars. The number seems to be about 2.5 that's being admitted. Very little of it actually went to the alleged charities that they were supposed to fund, most notably Haiti, of course, where they're now personas non grata. And there are all kinds of other bits of evidence, 6,000 pages from whistleblowers. FBI raided one of those whistleblowers last week and said, we're going to send a message here. Maybe the people that were testifying on Capitol Hill got the message, because the big story was they refused to turn over those 6,000 pages of documents to the House and Senate investigators.
Well, that's amazing. Didn't they just raid the offices of the lawyers when they wanted the stuff?
Well,
they just knock down the wall at Waco and set them on fire?
But that's different.
See,
that's
the deep state. They can go get it.
That's the deep state protecting its own. This is people trying to persecute or prosecute the deep state, and what they find is that the stone walls are up and they're really thick. I guess what we're saying, in other words, Tim, is that if David Koresh had become an FBI informant, he'd probably still be doing whatever it was they were accusing him of doing, and he'd probably have had all the wonderful full auto weapons he could have ever wanted. Certainly more than he actually had.
Every day we get more and more, not evidence, but just flat out proof right in front of our eyes of the two-tier justice system that this country works under.
Gee, do you think? Yeah.
And at some point, people are going to say enough is enough, and there's going to be a real problem, because if it doesn't apply to them, it's not going to apply to us, so we can do whatever we want too. And what we want is sometimes different from what the establishment wants.
Well, you make a good point.
The guillotines are starting to disappear from the museums now.
Most people, though, can't commit the kind of treason because they don't have the kind of connections that Hitler did. They can't sell uranium to the Russians for real because they don't have Robert Mueller on staff.
They don't have uranium.
Yeah, they don't have the uranium either. And they don't have the ability to print money like their buddies do. So it's a whole lot tougher. Now, I think what you're describing, I was sure after hearing that you were going to head over to Europe, and I'm not going to try to butcher gilet jaune, or however you say yellow vest in French. But it's not just in French in France anymore that people are mad as hell and not going to take it. It's spread to just about all of Northern Europe, where people are showing up in yellow vests and saying, we don't like being signed up against our will for the Islamic Invasion Treaty of the UN. And it's a lot more in France than just the claim of bogus fuel taxes to support non-existent global warming, although that was a piece of it. So many things, mm-hmm. and so many of people of different political stripes saying we've had it with the entire mess of corruption. And by the way, as of yesterday at least, both of the criminal nincompoops at the heads of both France and Britain were facing no confidence votes. Theresa May up there, and of course Macron mm-hmm. in France seem to be having their hands full. You probably know more about Theresa May than we do, Jeff, I assume.
Well, I know she got her vote of confidence back. I know that she's been told by Europe that there is no renegotiating the Brexit agreement that she's already agreed to. I also know that she says she's going to quit as soon as she can.
Good.
So we'll see what happens. But honestly, it's a big cluster there.
Yeah, well, and Brexit, you know, there's no, I wish they'd changed the name, because whatever is being done to Britain, it's certainly got nothing to do with exit anymore.
No, it's one of those things where the people vote for something with a clear voice, and the politicians said, oh, that's not what you people meant.
Yeah, if we had
here's
a captive
what you
court,
people really meant.
Here's what you're going to get, which is none of the above.
Yeah, you really meant to do it this way. Which is what we told you all the time. And it's absolutely nuts. And it's the way that things get delayed, and then eventually the rhetoric gets so confused that nobody knows what they're talking about. And then they agree. And nothing happens. And people are getting tired of that.
I think so. Okay. Well, here's the thing that's bugging me, guys, and I think we're seeing aspects of it. You pointed out correctly, Tim, nothing happens. And yet, I do get the feeling that there are enough people that have had it in Europe and certainly in America. We've said for a while that the intent here seems to be to try to foment a civil war. It looks like in Britain and in France and in Sweden and in even Germany, where Angela Merkel basically has told the German people, go pound salt, I'm going to do what I want to do, and the heck with you. They're more angry about it, and they're taken to the streets, and we'll see whether it grows from here or whether they're successful in short-circuiting it.
Well, it is growing, I mean, obviously. Green Vest, which is the environmental group, they've been marching with them. In other parts of Europe, they're already starting to see Yellow Vest activity. And even in Egypt, they have banned the sale of yellow vests to try to thwart any growing momentum there.
That's right.
Well, that should stop the movement right in its track.
Yeah, right?
You can't buy a yellow vest. That should end it.
That's kind of like outlawing memes on the web. Yeah, well, we'll outlaw your meme, and if we don't like that, then we'll just kick you off of Facebook and Twitter.
Or truth in advertising being used in the same sentence as Facebook and Twitter.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, was that a segue to the Google guy on Tuesday, Jeff?
No, it was a segue to several groups that have been hired by Google, journalists who have been paid to help fix Facebook's fake news problem, say they have lost all trust in the platform. Journalists working as fact checkers for Facebook have pushed to end a controversial media partnership with the social network, saying the company has ignored their concerns and failed to use their expertise to combat misinformation.
Meaning what? That they're not far enough left? Is that what the so-called journalists are claiming?
I'm assuming so. Their response, Brooke Binkowski, a former managing editor for Snopes, boo his
boo. Oh, there
boo,
you go.
saying they've essentially used us for a PR crisis avoidance, you know, red herring, you know?
That's a bit like hearing the Google employees saying, you know, we don't like what management's doing because they're in bed with the military. Now, they actually claim that they're upset about what they're doing with the communist Chinese, too. I have difficulty believing that the sentiment is as widespread, because at least the commies are on the same page with them when it comes to, their economic agenda.
Well, there is a segue on this, basically that – Google employees have been complaining because of the lack of respect for privacy that China has and that Google is working with China. But at the same
Dragonfly is called.
We have Dragonfly, very good. We have stuff happening in our own backyard. For example, Taylor Swift concert, if you haven't heard this. She used facial recognition technology for her latest L.A. concert, and it was used to detect stalkers. So everybody who entered went through facial recognition, identified who they were, filled out questionnaires, apparently. Lots of information that's happening on a daily basis in the United States that people just aren't talking about.
Now, at a concert, how does she determine the difference between a stalker and a fan? Don't fans go to lots of her concerts?
Well, I got to tell you, anybody who would go to a concert and travel around with you going to concerts, that's a stalker to me. But I think her idea of stalker.
They used to call them deadheads.
Or they called them groupies.
Yeah. Well, no, deadheads. That's Grateful Dead, Mark. You weren't.
Dead. Exactly.
I'm old enough to remember that too, Jeff. Yep.
Okay.
All right. Well, so.
But, it's. No,
nobody was stalking Jerry Garcia, believe me.
Hey, yeah, well, no fooling. Although Cherry Garcia is not a bad ice cream, except for it being Ben and Jerry's. Anyhow. Moving on. So anyhow, according to a study at Georgetown University in 2016, roughly 117 million people 117 million people's identities are already in facial recognition databases, and there is a minimum legal instruction on how to use that data. It is generally the wild, wild west when it comes to this use of technology. Adding that Illinois is the only state with comprehensive laws on the books on how biometric technology can be accessed and used. This is something that I think is, again, technology is outgrowing our laws.
And explain to me, if you will, why it is that having a law on the books against something, like, for instance, stealing guns from innocent people or doing anything else that Big Brother wants to do, how does that even slow them down? I remember when we used to have this clever thing called a warrant. And now we have Mueller and company who basically said, well, we don't need no stinking warrant, or even if we do, we'll make up the evidence, we'll leak it to the press, and that'll be our excuse for doing it anyway. So, I haven't seen much evidence of late that the law really matters. And that's not a cynical comment.
It only matters to those who are law-abiding. Locks keep honest people honest.
Exactly, and not much else. And they certainly don't keep out the real criminals, those that work for the federal bunglers of investigation in so many cases. Well, here's where I was headed, and I know that people are at least thinking, okay, well, we ought to mention that. The CEO of Google, Sundar Pichai, I call it Testifying. He was 3.5 hours in front of the Congress critters on Tuesday, and a whole lot of people were pretty frustrated because he wouldn't seem to answer a question straight, and when he did, he got caught lying over and over again, essentially saying, even though we're being told that people in high positions in Google, like their so-called, what's the term, multicultural marketing executive, Eliana Murillo, was caught. It was leaked how she had described all of Google's efforts to get out the votes in Latino areas and avoid having a President Trump. They called them partners. And Pichai denied that could possibly have happened. Clearly false, say the stories, his testimony. And he conceded that if it had happened, though, it would have been a partisan activity, and they're not at all partisan, of course, among a whole bunch of other things.
As long as the only base they have is in those little tiny blue dots around the big cities where the socialist machine works, as far as votes, that is, as long as they're only there, they can get out all the votes they want in L.A., and California is still going to be Democratic. So it doesn't matter how hard they push in those areas or how 100%-y those populations are, because once they're more than 50%, California's blue. So it's the big cities.
Okay, well, we're at the break. We'll leave it there. We'll pick it up in a second.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. The second half drive time, Friday with your host, Mark Hall, Tim Kern, and myself, Jeff Gilbert. On the other side of the break, we were talking about Pache, and I wanted to let Mark finish up on that, and then I'll bring out my tidbit that I open up the second half with. Mark, go ahead and pick it up, man.
All right. Well, actually, two more things on that score, guys. One, of course, when it comes to the test-a-lies, this was probably the Whopper de Tutte Whoppers, because Pichai repeatedly told the Congress critters not to worry. We don't track anything. Well, he didn't say it that way. He said users can opt out of Google's location tracking services. The Associated Press had already said prior to this that he was lying through his teeth. And the claim is, anytime you want to, you can just stop using our location tracking. And essentially what everybody knows is that's absolute whopper, because Big Brother with his back doors can turn it back on. So can Google, and so can their application partners when they feel like it. Now, there's his weasel, because he can say, it's the application partners that turn it on. They're the real users, and you people who own the phones or think you do and think you can turn things off, well, you're just fooled. Now, there's one other thing I think is funny. I'll throw this in there, too, because it caught me completely by surprise. A California Congress critter, Democrat, well-known, not particularly high-intellect individual, but in this case, you got one right. Zoe Lofgren of California was literally there in the hearing and talking about how Google manipulates the searches. And she literally stepped up and held up her cell phone and said, I just did a search for idiot. And it comes up with, literally 3/4 of the pictures on the first page are of Donald Trump. And even Zoe Lofgren says, that doesn't seem quite right. It's almost like there's a political agenda at work here.
You'd think.
But they're going to lie about it. So he gave her a long technical answer. You know what we call that when I was working at IBM, Tim? That's baffling them with BS.
It certainly is, and of course Congress is pretty easily baffled, as we see time and time again. I look at years of Frank Audi, and years of Mitch McConnell's complaints, and years of all the stuff going on, and what's that mantra? Nothing happens.
Yeah. Well, they're posturing, of course. Here we are saying that we're gonna call this guy on the carpet. Sure. And when all is said and done, they're gonna continue to allow the CIA to fund Google, or is it vice versa now? Remember the line from Darth Vader? Once you were the teacher, now I am the master. And that seems to be exactly what Google is telling the various intelligence agencies.
Well, they rely on Google so much, they really are in trouble. Because like everybody else in the world, they're underfunded and undermanned and lazy. And if they can get it from Google, that's where they go get it. There's no real gumshoe work going on anymore.
No, and get it back might be a better way to put it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And Google is more believable than the CIA anyway, so... they've got that working for them.
Assuming you draw a distinction. I'm not sure I would go quite that far, Tim.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Jeff, you were onto something, and I interrupted you. Sorry, Jeff.
Oh, no. I was just saying that, isn't it a shame that we can say that Google is more, honest than the FBI? Anyhow, listen, guys, I want to take it back to my little unique thing for the half, and then we can move on. I want to nominate Albert Einstein for the person of history, since his theory of general relativity has been proven, thankfully, due to two European satellites that were misapplied to orbit, and they have an elliptical orbit, and they've been able to verify that Einstein was correct in his theory that within a gravity well, or the closer to the deeper within a gravity field, that time will pass slower than a device farther outside the gravity field. And they were able to test it with two misplaced satellites that are in an elliptical orbit. And those satellites, depending on where they are at any given moment, have an 8,500 kilometer variance in their orbit. This 8,500 kilometer variance is enough for them to see differences in the clocks in how they operate versus the ones that are when they're closer to their to the Earth's magnetic field versus farther away. So for me, I think it's a great day when we can look back and say, well, that theory was true.
Well,
it's not
at least
conspiracy, it's just true.
Although if you hear somebody use the term settled science, then you know that they're not a scientist among all things.
Yeah.
Because what it is it's more evidence that supports the theory. It doesn't mean it's proven. And by the way, it's not the first such evidence, Jeff. There have been studies that have been done with redshift and light passing through black holes, air vicinity, and all kinds of things that have said, that particular phenomenon does seem to have been predicted by his theories of relativity, and it actually shows up. There's some other things as well with the particle physics. From the particle physics realm.
Well, I think that it's really hard to say there's a single person though for man of the ever.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at I don't know where people would be without Pythagoras or Euclid or for that matter Isaac Newton.
Yep.
There's a very small group that made a difference, but I can't say that any one was more important than another.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of F equals MA and some of Newton's stuff. let me throw out, as long as we're talking about settled science and person of the century who certainly has demonstrated what real science is and, more importantly, in his case, isn't, we have to mention Al Gore, because this was the week when the 10th anniversary of Al Gore's famous prediction that by literally 5 years from that date, December of 10 years ago, the North Pole would be completely ice-free because of non-existent man-made global warming. So here is a theory that has proven to be a lie. And I guess we could celebrate the fifth year of ice-free North Pole, though, right, Tim?
Well, I think so. Although you can't say a theory is a lie, you just say it's inoperative.
I think we could say that some of the claims that he made and a lot of the predictions were lies. And when you catch people, as we did at East Anglia at the Climate Research Unit in Britain years ago, manipulating the data, in other words, we called it dry labbing when I was in college, fudging things, getting rid of data that you don't like and manipulating data that doesn't quite show what you want to make it appear hotter and so forth. That's lying. I'm just a little old-fashioned.
You are. It's a lot like the kid saying, but everybody has a fill in the blank. And if you really check everybody, they don't all have one.
Okay. And in this case,
whether it's a $10,000 telephone or a $60,000 sports car, they don't all have them.
Okay, somehow or other, I find the comparison of Al Gore to a 10-year-old, on the one hand, a little bit appealing, and on the other hand, kind of distressing.
Yeah, good point.
Okay, well, Tim, you got another, you got one that's kind of off the wall that you want to throw into the mix?
Well, you know, we have these school shootings from time to time, and we had one, almost had one in Indiana yesterday. Richmond is right about on the border of Ohio, central Indiana, central Ohio. It's almost Ohio. And somebody, and we don't have all the facts yet, somebody reported a particular 14-year-old was all upset and carrying a gun. They didn't mention whether it was a handgun, rifle, multiple guns, whatever. They say he was taking a gun to school. And the police got ahead of him. Oh, no, he's not a student at this school, by the way. It was a Richmond middle school. The police took the threat seriously. They went to the school. They were there ahead of time. They locked the kid out. The kid shot through the glass door. And apparently at that time, he was confronted by the police and he shot himself. Nobody else was hurt.
Okay, so
and
I guess
that's sort of the way that's the way it's supposed to work. It's too bad for that kid because obviously a 14-year-old can be fixed.
All right,
but, if the system finally worked, somebody in Indiana had their head up, and the police weren't cowering in the halls, and they went and did their job, stopped the kid. Nobody got hurt, and the poor kid just ended up killing himself.
And so it turns out that what he thought was a gun-free zone wasn't gun-free after all. Maybe there's a lesson there too.
Wait a minute. I like what Tim threw out there as far as the cops weren't cowering in the halls. That guy has caught so much grief. And even just the recent court case, he was basically lambasted for cowering in the halls.
Well, okay,
said,
wait a second. Make sure
people
know.
I wasn't legally bound to approach the gunman.
Well, which
the
judge said, which
you're
guy?
You're talking Parkland?
Yeah, Parkland.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because,
yeah,
you know,
Parkland, Florida.
That one was an order stand down, yeah, too, by the sheriff, it would seem.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's
you
not,
can't.
You have to understand the police are there to
draw chalk lines.
Not so much to prevent crime, but to investigate crime. So they'll be there to draw the chalk lines, and then they'll figure out what happened. But they don't prevent crime because you do have a piece of prior restraint you're looking at. And gosh, I mean, sure, the kid's firing down the halls, but he's probably not trying to shoot anybody. I mean, come on, where do you get to the point where the kid's dangerous? Yeah, exactly.
I have to
shoot up the school.
I have to play the cynic here. Honestly, Tim, as you were talking about the fact that the police did the right thing, as opposed to the police not only not doing the right thing in Florida, but having it looked like pre-planned to do the wrong thing. I'm wondering if maybe the real issue here was that the poor little innocent shooter, or not quite so innocent, but now dead shooter in Indiana, didn't do the proper coordination in advance with his handlers.
Well, he may not have had any handlers. Sometimes,
yeah,
you know, people are just independent thinkers.
And that's a problem. I guess if you really want to get away with it, like we've seen in so many other places, you better have scouts and lookouts and others that are clearing the way and making sure that it really is a gun-free killing zone.
Well, he didn't get very far with it, and that's thank heaven for
Thankfully.
That.
All right. Well, yeah, on the same scale, I guess, we ought to mention the other one that got a lot of press, and that was at Strasbourg in France, where a fellow went in with a gun, started shooting people. I believe he ended up killing three or three point something. One person was called mm-hmm. brain dead but still alive, wounding a whole bunch of others. And as he was doing this, he actually got reported. This is the thing I found interesting, shouting Allahu Akbar. And then it turned out afterwards that even some of the leftist press in Europe, the Daily Mail and a bunch of others, had to report on the fact that this guy was well known to cops in no less than three different countries. He'd been arrested a whole bunch of times. He was a clear association with Muslim terrorists, all kinds of evidence. And they didn't like having to report that, I guess, but they actually reported it anyway. So that was kind of the really changed news. That the first time in a while, European press actually reported on an Islamic terrorist. I don't think they still call him a terrorist. They're just saying he has Islamic terror connections. But nevertheless, you know, the fact that he was doing things that were politically incorrect while he was committing murders didn't get silenced. Imagine that.
You mean a disgruntled foreigner?
Yeah, well, he's been in the country and in several countries long enough. I don't know that anybody wants to claim the guy.
A disgruntled traveler.
Okay, yeah, a migrant. He migrates a lot. And he likes to...
A refugee, yeah. There you go.
Okay, so the fact that it came out is kind of interesting. Now, there was one other interesting piece of news. I do not remember the name of the cleric or Muslim apologist or whatever, but there literally was a follow-up story that said their version of CARE, or, you know, one of these Islamic terror-associated organizations, was taking these newspapers, BBC was one of them, to task. How dare they report on the incidental and non-relevant fact that this guy was shouting Allahu Akbar as he was dispatching people?
Huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah, why take away the motive? Why take away the background? Why take away any understanding? Come on.
Okay, well, here's where I want to go after that, because the other thing that I think is... ought to be a genuine concern, in addition to all the other lawlessness, two stories that have been developing for several weeks. Of course, one and all of us here have been to Boulder, Colorado, the People's Republic of Boulder. Back in May, they passed an absolutely unconscionable gang rape of the Second Amendment. and they demanded that anybody who wants to keep what they once thought was their property in the People's Republic there must go down, not register it, certify it with Big Brother. And the deadline is coming up.
What does that mean?
That means they're not going to tell you it's registered. You just have to take it to the police, and you have to show it to the police at the county, at the Boulder Courthouse, and the police get to say, you look like a good little slave. I think we'll let you keep this one for now. And you have to have a piece of paper saying that it's certified, because if they later break down your door and find it, then they intend to send you to jail. This is not or, but and. For 90 days, and fine you $1,000, and of course they'll steal the firearm that you peons aren't allowed to have anyway. And here's the part I thought was funny. This is, I guess, the good news. In the People's Republic of Boulder, there are estimated to be 150,000 or so, more than one per person, in other words, weapons, because Boulder was at least once part of the West, that are supposed to be grandfathered in and must be certified. Out of that 150,000, as of when I checked yesterday, the latest figure says, so far, the leftists have managed to certify 87. So if they really work hard before the deadline, which they've already changed by a few days, they might get to 0.1% compliance.
Good. I hope they're all water pistols that they're certifying, sir.
Well, no, they have to come out and look at them and make sure that they're really a dreaded assault weapon before they decide to let you keep them if you're a good slave. Now, here's the other one, guys. This one, honestly, this one bugs me even worse, and I'm going to say nasty things about the People's Republic of New Jersey next. Because not only have they made it a felony, and this law went into effect this week. I use the term loosely. It's not a law, remember. AMJUR, Section 177 says, a law in contravention of the supreme law is no law at all. You know, it provides no obligation, creates no office, bestows no power, affords no protection, justifies no act performed under it. So it's not a law that's been passed in New Jersey. It's a gang rape of their constitution, and it basically turns anyone that would enforce this thing into a thug under color of law. But having said all of that, here's the story from Breitbart. Mike Adams had it up yesterday. The New Jersey State Police have now admitted that they refuse to rule out house-to-house enforcement and literal gunpoint confiscation of magazines under their new Nazi-style ban. And they said to Breitbart, quote, "We do not discuss enforcement strategies," unquote, Achtung. That ought to alarm people when they're not only willing to essentially say, we're going to make you a felon, we will kill you if we find you with these things, and we have not ruled out that we'll go door to door, because, hey, we don't need no stinking warrant, right? And if we can violate the Second Amendment, why not the Fourth? Yeah. Well, what evidence do you have that somebody is an honest citizen? Well, if they're an honest citizen, I guess that's enough evidence, because that means they might actually believe they have a right to free speech, freedom of worship, and to keep and bear arms.
That's pretty astounding. You're talking about you don't like to use the word law, you're talking a legislative proclamation.
Okay, yes.
You know, and it's interesting, too. I mean, it's the same thing as we see all the time with all our presidents of the last 30 years, where they simply make an executive decision and say, here's what's going to happen.
Well, but in Trump's case, they say, no, it's not.
We're not going to enforce that. We're going to make this up. We're going to not make that up. We got to get to the point where we don't have a dictatorial style of government. And it starts at the very top, and it goes all the way, like you say, into the state legislatures. Cities do it too. When you talked about Boulder's ordinance, is that Boulder County or Boulder the city?
Well, it'll be Boulder County too, because the People's Republic of Boulder County is pretty much run by the city, for those that know it. But in this case, it is, in fact, the city.
Okay. So, I mean, it goes all the way from city government all the way to the White House. And at some point, we have to figure out what kind of a legislative process we have and what kind of constitutional limits are on these legislators. We don't have a democracy, and we don't have a dictatorship, and I'm pretty sure that if you really asked people, they wouldn't want either one.
Well, and honestly, Tim, the problem is we don't have a legislative process either. And I've been,
we don't need one.
Yeah.
We don't need one.
Well,
if they make a law, everybody ignores it. And if they don't make a law, somebody proclaims it.
And they proclaim a law that basically is a violation of the supreme law, and they don't even care.
Nobody calls them on it.
You weren't with us last week, but this has been one of my hot button lists for quite a while. There is a scumbag, a pretender, an absolute treasonous blankety blank, and I run out of adjectives that I can say in polite company, named Swalwell in California, who claims to have been elected to sit in the Congress. Now, if we still had an honest Congress, basically, and I heard Nancy Pelosi threaten to do this to some Republican for who knows what reason, they just don't want to seat the person. Well, Swalwell literally should be tried for treason and not seated in the next Congress, because the man came out in advance of the so-called swearing in, and here's the problem. Right? People are going to put their hand on the Bible and swear to preserve, protect, and defend a Constitution that they have already pre-indicated they don't care about. So Swalwell said he wants to pass a complete ban, and essentially exactly what one of the other, I think it was Barbara Boxer said, Mr. and Mrs. America, you got a gun, turn them in. They're not even hiding it anymore. Swalwell said, we intend to steal them. He didn't use that term, confiscate, kind of like in South Africa. And if the American people don't like them, he said, we just got nukes here. And, of course, they have other things. We have other vase, too. But here's the thing, Tim. It's not even being hidden anymore.
I'm pretty sure that the California National Guard doesn't have nukes. I think you ought to check into that one, too.
Now, he's talking about, this is the U.S. Congress this guy's talking about. Now, you're right, he doesn't have the authority to do that, but he doesn't have the authority to violate the Constitution either.
You got to point out which part of it is still in effect for him to believe that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm running out of parts that are still in effect, to tell you the truth. Some of the procedural stuff still works.
Not very much.
So, you know, we have a real problem with the lack of education, the lack of appreciation of how we ended up in this historical spot. Even as recently as the Civil War, which is only really two lifetimes ago, if you got old people running around, three lifetimes if you got normal aged people. But even that recently, it was a constitutional question, and Lincoln ignored it, and we had a civil war. Even that time, it was based on constitutional argument. We lost that entire piece somewhere around the First World War, I believe, and have totally disregarded it ever since at least Kennedy. And it's very disturbing for me to watch history about to repeat itself, and I'm just happy to be this age and not 20, because I'd be very hard to manage at age 20.
Okay. Well, I think the problem is that we have a whole lot of people who are aware of the situation and can see what's coming, and most of us who have been around long enough to see what's coming aren't 20 anymore. And unfortunately, those that are 20 have been dumbed down by an educational, and I use that term really loosely, process that's been designed to lie to them about what the Constitution ever said and what the point of the rule of law ever was. All right.
That's big trouble.
It is.
Let's move on.
Well, what we're going to have to do, I think, is move on and say, hey, we're literally at the end of the show for today. So I would encourage people, if you don't know your rights, remember you don't have any. And the intent is that you're not going to have any anyway. Jeff had to say goodbye. He got disconnected in Costa Rica. Thanks, Tim. Shabbat shalom, folks.